BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
You're about to listen to a brand new series of Lady Swindlers with Lucy Worsley. New episodes will be released weekly wherever you get your podcasts, but if you're in the UK, you can listen to the latest episodes a week early, first on BBC Sounds.
Welcome to Lady Swindlers from BBC Radio 4 with me, Lucy Worsley. This is where history meets true crime with a twist. Join us as we travel back in time and across the world, tailing scammers, crooks and con women. Women from all walks of life who found themselves on the wrong side of the law. Today on Lady Swindlers, meet a magpie, a one-woman crime spree, a thief who stole and stole and stole.
An opal brooch, a silver jam spoon.
A lady burglar. Remarkable story and clever capture.
An umbrella. A pair of patent shoes.
Her nerve is equal to her physical development.
One gunmetal watch. One muff chain.
She takes everything in the coolest possible fashion.
One scarf pin. One veil. One pair of scissors.
This is more than a case of occasional sticky fingers. This is a career in burglary. For this case, we need a guest detective with particular skills. And we have a real-life Detective Chief Inspector with us today. She was a police officer for nearly 30 years. She's famously the inspiration for DCI Jane Tennyson, played by Helen Mirren in TV's Prime Suspect. It is Jackie Bolton. Welcome back to the Lady Swindlers studio, Jackie.
Good to see you again, Lucy.
Now, are you ready to jump into this case?
Definitely.
Let's go. The year is 1896. We're in Shepherd's Bush, West London, where all is not well.
For some weeks, the people of Shepherd's Bush have suffered from the depredations of a burglar who has succeeded in entering a number of houses and carried off the booty before the inhabitants or the police have been acquainted with the fact of the illegal entry.
Carried off the booty. So there's been a spate of burglaries in the area. Residents are on edge. Now we're about to meet a very important character in this story. Here's Detective Sergeant Knott. He's patrolling the neighbourhood, determined to catch this elusive burglar. On the 13th of February, he's out before dawn.
At about 7:15 this morning, I saw an unusual light at Askew Road. I know the habits of the people in the house and the time they rise because it was broken into a few days ago.
He stations one police constable at the front of the house, another at the back.
I knocked at the front door. Mrs. Hawkins, the occupier, then let me in. I heard the door of the back kitchen being unbolted.
D.S. Knott sees a figure running out into the back garden with a clock under her arm.
She jumped over the wall into the next garden. She was very nimble. I ran up to her and said, I am a sergeant of the police and shall take you into custody for breaking into that house.
The woman replies,
I don't know what made me do it.
So, a female burglar caught red-handed with a clock under her arm. Now, Jackie, do you think D.S. Knott has done a good job? Has he gone about this the right way? He sounds quite dedicated to me.
I think he's done an excellent job.
Oh, great. Good, good. He's got the seal of approval from Jackie Moulton. That is worth happening. Jackie, you're bringing not only your detective skills to our case today, but also local knowledge.
Well, I was a DCI in Hammersmith in the late 1980s. I know Hammersmith and Shepherd's Bush very well.
Fabulous. And did you deal with many burglaries in your time in that area?
Yes, we ran a very efficient burglary squad. Our detection rate was extremely high, 25% back in 1990. Those were our targets, burglars and robbers.
And have you encountered many female burglars?
I can't recall any when we were running the burglary squad at Hammersmith, but I did meet one. So what happened a lot for burglars way back then, you could identify them by their modus operandi, so how they actually entered into the buildings and stuff. There'd be a pattern there. She said to me that her MO was to climb up the drainpipe. So that was commonly known back then as a cat burglar, and that was her proficiency.
Very interesting. Well, Jackie, I want to know more about our female burglar and how she broke into that house in Askew Road. So I went out on surveillance with our in-house historian, Professor Rosalind Crone. We like to think of ourselves as Cagney and Lacey. And here's what we got up to on the mean streets of West London.
And are you done with the donuts?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
We've got all the kit for a proper stakeout here because we are recreating the stakeout carried out by Detective Sergeant Knott at the Metropolitan Police. And we're parked opposite the house in Askew Road where this burglary has happened. Do you think we've got better snacks than he would have done in 1896?
Oh, yeah, definitely. The police in 1896, they're drilled men, right? No drinks, no snacks, no loitering and gossiping with neighbours.
Can you tell me what this whole area of Shepherd's Bush was like in 1896?
So it was a relatively new area of London. It had been market gardens around here, but the railway was extended, the Hammersmith and City Railway, in 1864, so it made it a viable commuter suburb. Now, I've got with me a copy of the Ordnance Survey map from the 1890s. So here we are. You see my little red pin on Askew Road. And can you see out to the west and out to the north all those open spaces still?
So for burglars, you can get away. There's good transport, there's open fields. It's like a burglar's paradise,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah, definitely.
Huh. Now, can you tell me who is this woman then that Detective Sergeant Knott caught during his stakeout?
I can. So her name is Minnie Phoebe.
Minnie.
Yeah, and she's about 20 years old. And she's described in the records of the time as a domestic servant.
Is she already known to the police?
No, she's not. But they know that she's responsible for burgling this house because she's actually wearing the clothes that she stole several days ago from the lady of the house,
no
Mrs.
way.
Hawkins. Yeah, yeah.
That's adding insult to injury, isn't it? You burgle someone's clothes and you come back and rob the house again in that outfit.
Yeah. Have a look there.
Oh, yes. Lloyd's Weekly Newspaper. When captured by Detective Sergeant Knott, she was dressed in a stylish brown jacket with puffed sleeves. That sounds quite nice. A black cashmere dress and was wearing a pair of neat boots. What a stylish burglar.
Yeah, she's got into the house on both occasions with the same method. She forces open the small window above the water closet, above the toilet, and squeezes through. And that's her MO, right? Very small windows and doors. And Detective Sergeant Knott sees this exact method used in the other break-ins in the area. People are absolutely stunned by her physical capabilities.
Oh, yes. The captured woman's physique is extraordinary, and her personal strength may be guessed at when it is stated that in one burglary, she absolutely removed the door from its jambs, leaving a space of 8 inches. That's tiny, 8 inches.
Yeah, yeah.
This was done without any instruments except a very stiff knife found on her, specially fitted for dealing with window catches. Her nerve is equal to her physical development. She takes everything in the coolest possible fashion, and she made a smart resistance when first pounced upon. She sounds rather cool. Can you tell us any more about Minnie? Is she local?
Yeah, she lived her whole life on this side of London. So she was born in Uxbridge in 1875. And when she was just one, her father died, leaving her teenaged mother with 2 daughters and pregnant with a 3rd child. The mother remarries and the family move to Hammersmith. And I have a copy of the 1891 census here. And you can see Alfred, her stepfather, is a labourer. And the girls, the daughters, are all laundresses.
Laundresses.
So doing the washing for other people.
I guess that this road here, Askew Road, well, it must be posher, right?
Yeah, no, there's a bit of a difference. So I brought with me as well the census from Askew Road in 1891.
Her target.
Yeah, that's right. And we can see our victims of her burglary. So this is Mrs. Hawkins here, and she's a widow, and she's got 2 daughters living with her. First is a governess, and the second is an artist.
Hmm.
Yeah. Definitely more affluent than Minnie's neighbourhood, but we're dealing with the comfortable lower middle class.
And I guess that these people are rich enough to have servants.
Yeah, yeah. Some of them have a live-in servant. Others are relying on a servant who come during the day, like a maid of all work. And the police discover that Minnie
takes a clean white apron with her every time she goes out to commit a burglary. She can put it on as she leaves the house. And then she just blends in right away, especially in the early morning with the other servants coming to do their day's work.
That's devilishly clever. She just blends in.
Yeah.
You can see how, A, that would work, and B, if you lived in that house, be utterly terrifying. We're safely back in the studio, and I'm now happy to welcome my fellow undercover operative, Roz. Good to see you, Roz.
Hello, Lucy, and hello, Jackie.
Jackie, do you think Roz and I have a bright future in surveillance?
I think you're a little bit obvious by your attire, to be honest, though. You weren't very good, either of you.
Okay.
You can't stand out, can you? Because people, criminals, are surveillance conscious much more today.
We shouldn't have been wearing those sunglasses and eating those donuts.
Exactly.
No. Okay. We've been having a good time thinking about Minnie's exploits, but I'm also thinking about the residents of Askew Road here, asleep in their beds, worried that they're going to be the next victims of this burglar. This is a nasty crime, would you say?
Personally, I think it's one of the worst crimes that anybody could commit, burglary residential. And the thing is, your home is your safe space. If you feel that somebody's gone into your home, rifled through your drawers, etc., stolen sentimental items, that was the biggest upset for victims of burglary, because they would tell us, somebody's come into my house, I no longer feel safe. I've been a victim of burglary twice, unfortunately. And the thing that really, really has upset me the most is they took stuff belonging to my grandfather, my mother, jewellery, little trinkets. Doesn't mean anything to a burglar, but they meant so much to me.
I can see that you're really cut up about it. I'm very sorry that happened to you.
Yeah. It's not a nice crime. So any burglars listening to this, don't do it.
I was once burgled too, and although the story has a happy ending, I chased the guy, I caught him, I made a citizen's arrest, and he was sent to prison. But it still took me ages to get over it.
Wow.
Even though I had felt powerful in the moment.
Yeah.
So back in 1896, Jackie, burglary as a crime was specifically breaking into a house at night.
Yeah, and that was defined under the Larceny Act. Burglary was defined as breaking into properties through the night between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. And in the day, it was classified as housebreaking.
Roz, how common was burglary in the Victorian era?
Burglary wasn't that common, and very few women were involved in it. So according to the Judicial Statistics for England and Wales, in the year 1895, in a population of around 29 million, there are 1,374 burglaries reported to the police. And in the same year, 552 men are arrested for burglary, and only 34 women. So that's roughly 5% of the total. This is also a time when serious crime is actually declining. Even so, there remains this real fear of burglary. And it's fueled by the press because it relates to the growing middle classes and even the increasing affluence of the upper echelons of the working classes. These people have nicer places to live and more things in those homes to lose.
Well, it seems to me that the Victorians are both appalled but also fascinated by the idea of a lady burglar.
Yes. Historian Eloise Moss has explored this idea in her book on burglary in London in this period. The lady burglar is the antithesis of the ideal woman at the time. Women, they're not supposed to be athletic, agile criminals breaking into the domestic space. So the legal profession, journalists and society in general go to great lengths to portray the female burglar as some kind of aberration. Wrong in some way. Spinsters or jilted lovers or freaks. And this is really done to take the sting out of the crime, to divest these women of any kind of power, to remove their threat in society.
I love it that spinsters and freaks are put into the same category. So this is an age when the heroine of society, in female terms, is a homemaker, but the burglar is a homebreaker. She's absolutely the devil compared with the angel in the house.
Perfectly summarised, Lucy.
Oh, thank you. Now, Jackie, people were surprised by our lady burglar in 1896. What was it like for you being a lady police officer when you started working? Presumably that was an unusual job for a woman.
I joined when I was 19 in 1970, so that's pre-Sexual Discrimination Act. Women police officers were a rare breed. When I joined, we were in a different department. We were separate from the men. In fact, where I worked in Charles Street in Leicester at the time, we were in a different building across the police yard, so totally unintegrated.
Is it the case, do you think, that me and Ron, if we knew, would be quite shocked with some of the stuff you had to put up with?
Well, do you know what? When I kind of tell my story, people just, their mouths drop and they just go, I can't believe it, because they can't believe where we are now to what it was like 50 odd years ago. But I always wanted to be a detective. So in 1975, post-Sexual Discrimination Act and things, I went into the CID as a detective sergeant. An initiation ceremony to be accepted as a detective was to have your backside stamped with the station stamp. They would get hold of you and then pull up your skirt, drag your underwear down, and then you're with your bare bottom, and you were stamped with a CID stamp and said, you know, welcome, you're one of us. There's no initiation ceremony for the boys. It was just for women.
That is just jaw-dropping. That really is.
I've done lots of work and research, and it's a common story across women in policing back then. And you know what? We all kind of went with it, ha, 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 banter, 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 want to be part of the team. It's when you think about it afterwards or later on, you think, oh, crikey.
That's really shocking. Goodness. Well, let's catch up with Minnie Phoebe, our lady burglar. After her arrest in the garden on Askew Road, she's taken to the police court. She's indicted on 3 counts of burglary, but she's suspected of up to 20. She's put on trial at the Old Bailey, where she pleads guilty. The judge is clearly rather perplexed by the case. Here he is talking to DS Knott, who's there to give evidence.
A woman charged with burglary?
Yes.
All by herself? No man with her to instruct her?
So far as I know, she has committed several burglaries all by herself.
The new woman with a vengeance.
The new woman. We've come across this idea before in Lady Swindlers. In the late 19th century, some women are moving away from established Victorian ideals of femininity. They're embracing education and greater independence. They're getting jobs. They're riding bicycles. But Roz, when the judge calls Minnie the new woman with a vengeance, he doesn't mean this positively, does he?
No, not at all. He's suggesting that her boldness and her criminality is really the direct result of greater agency for women at this time.
And in fact, Minnie doesn't fit the mould of a new woman at all, does she?
No, not at all. Minnie's not taking advantage of new freedoms for women at this time. She's not really in a position to. She's not from the new educated middle classes or even the upper working class. She's not committing crime as a revolutionary statement. And she's certainly not the first woman to burgle a house.
Once the judge has got his head around the concept of a female burglar working independently, he sentences Minnie to 9 months in Holloway Prison. She's released in November 1896 and goes home to her family. Over Christmas, she falls in love with a soldier called Joe. But she's absolutely crushed when her feelings aren't reciprocated. She even contemplates taking her own life.
Dearest Joe, it is all my fault, so don't trouble. This is all I have to say for the last time. So with my best and kindest love to you, I am yours truly, Minnie P.
Poor Minnie. In early January, she steals a set of earrings and 6 shillings from her sisters, and she flees. Next, she burgles a house in Hammersmith. She's arrested by, and here he is again, D.S. Knott.
Guilty.
12 months hard labour.
On release, Minnie does find work as a servant and somehow moves to Cheltenham. But old habits die hard. She breaks into at least 2 houses. She's arrested and put on trial in Gloucester. D.S. Knott now travels all the way from London to identify her in court.
Guilty.
3 months on each count.
It's now the year 1900. A new century dawns. Minnie is back in London, and when 15 houses get burgled in Shepherd's Bush, she's arrested by, you've guessed it, D.S. Knott. She's sentenced to 18 months in Wormwood Scrubs prison. Outwardly, at least, she doesn't seem all that fussed.
Whilst in court, the prisoner exhibited the utmost contempt for all present, rudely interrupted counsel, witness and judge, and impertinently inquired when sentenced.
Is that all?
She doesn't sound very penitent. Jackie, this is really sad. She's in and out of prison like a yo-yo. Since you retired from the police, I know you've done lots of work with prisoners. In your experience, what is it that helps people to leave crime behind and reinvent themselves?
Well, it's structure normally. So being in employment, drug and alcohol interventions, offender behaviour programmes, education, especially if these things are happening in prison, because a lot of the guys that I are working with are in there because of their addiction to drugs or alcohol. So it's all kind of looking at it much more in the bigger picture.
That makes sense to me. Now, DS Knott travelled all the way to Gloucester to identify Minnie. Today, if someone commits a burglary in a different part of the country, I guess they just put the person's name into a database, right, Jackie?
Of course you can, yeah. But DS Knott, though, it may well have been that she'd given another name, a false name.
Yes, yeah.
So he had to go and identify her.
Well, yeah, Minnie certainly doesn't make it easy for the police at this time because she uses a string of aliases to cover her criminal past. But the interesting thing about this case is DS Knott just keeps popping up as the policeman who keeps prosecuting her.
Yeah, that and continuity seems really important.
It is really important, and it really shows how a lot of policing and prosecution worked in the 19th century, that you really focus your attention on the people with criminal records and hammer them because you think that they are responsible for most of the crime. And therefore, if you keep them under this tight surveillance and in prison when necessary, you can actually bring down the crime rates. That's the belief at the time.
If you police an area within Shepherd's Bush, okay, so it's not particularly big back then, or Hammersmith, you know who your local criminals are through intelligence, through seeing them, et cetera, et cetera. That was policing.
Yeah.
That's how you often police identification.
He has got a computer database. It's just in his head.
It's just in his head. Yeah.
Now, after countless break-ins and four prison sentences, will Minnie hang up her swag bag for good? Back in Minnie's old stomping ground, I took a stroll with Roz. Roz and I are back in Shepherd's Bush, and I'm glad to say we're out of the car. We've come round the corner from Askew Road, where Minnie was arrested. We're now in St. Stephen's Avenue. Bigger, posher houses here. What's the significance of this spot, Roz?
Well, Lucy, after Minnie was arrested in February 1896, the police discovered that she had been squatting in this very house right here for at least the last 3 months.
Oh.
And she had broken in by smashing a small pane of glass in the kitchen window, and she reached in and lifted the catch.
As she always did when she was burglaring.
Yeah, her trademark entry, right? Mm. And look, I've brought with me the report from Lloyd's Weekly News, and it includes a picture, a sketch of the house. And Minnie made herself really at home here. She cooked her meals in the kitchen. She slept in a small dressing room at the top of the house. Her bed was a drugget square. That's like a woolen floor covering, which she had stolen from next door.
And it says here her pillow was composed of dresses and apparel, all the proceeds of burglaries in the neighbourhood. I find that really poignant that she was sleeping on a little bed, a little nest, if you like, made out of stolen clothes. That sounds like a lonely life. What happened to her later on?
After she is released from prison in 1901, Minnie finds work as a charwoman. Now, that's the lowest grade of domestic worker.
So that's hard, horrible work that she's doing.
Yeah, really hard work. She doesn't appear again in the criminal records, so we might suppose that she gave up burglary, or maybe she just didn't get caught. She has two daughters, probably both illegitimate. We've got no record of her marriage. And she continues in domestic work, lives in various places in West London, and dies at the ripe old age of 93.
So she died in 1969. That is amazing. She was born a Victorian in the 1870s, but she saw so much change, the coming of TV, I suppose, and even the space race. Jackie, we know very little about the final 70 years of Minnie's life after apparently she went straight. But what do you make of her?
Well, she did what she had to do. She was a servant, so she saw people dressed in finery. She would be of minimum wage. So she wanted a bit of what everybody else has got, because it was interesting, wasn't it, that the most things that she stole were clothes.
Consumer goods, yeah.
And I think she's in and out of prison. Life's not going too well for her. She has to change something. Then she has children. Life moves on for her and she leaves criminality behind. Mind you, living till 93, that's not bad, is it?
It isn't. Ros, what do you take away from this case?
Well, the Victorians really wanted to make Minnie an extraordinary, unusual character so that they could reinforce particular gender stereotypes. We want to break away from that. We also want to resist simplistic comparisons between rates of female offending and male offending, because often they just don't work.
Exactly.
There were few female burglars and housebreakers, but we need to remember that women had other opportunities to steal from households and other indoor locations through their work as servants and in factories and so on. And a lot of this kind of low-level offending, it just doesn't show up in the official records and statistics. And then finally, although we don't know exactly what Minnie planned to do with all the treasures she collected in her Aladdin's cave, it's highly likely that she would have sold on at least some of them. And this was a way of making money at a time when opportunities for young women like Minnie, growing up in poverty, working in domestic service, were very limited.
I wish we had Minnie here, though, because we could have asked her, couldn't we, what her reality and truth was.
Very good point. We're guessing. So, in the 1890s, the absolute most famous burglar around was called Raffles. He was a fictional character, a gentleman thief. He was glamorous and he was cool. When I first heard about our athletic lady burglar, I thought, oh, Minnie must have been a female Raffles. She was physically strong, she was transgressive, she broke the rules of society, especially for Victorian women. And we've heard that newspaper readers thought that she was a kind of female Raffles too. She was glamorised in the press. The reality, though, is much sadder and bleaker. Minnie did have moments of power, but she ended up washing floors, as women all too often do. Well, thank you so much to today's wonderful guest detective, Jackie Moulton, and as ever, to in-house historian, Rosalind Crone. Next time, we travel to New York to meet world-famous spirit mediums, the Fox Sisters. Dogged by claims of fraud and trickery, we'll need all of our detective skills to separate fact from fiction. Lady Swindlers with Lucy Worsley is produced by Sarah Goodman, and the readers are Claire Corbett, Jonathan Keeble, and Alex Phelps. Sound design is by Chris McLean. The historical consultant is Rosalind Crone. The commissioning editor for BBC Radio 4 is Rhiann Roberts, and the executive producer is Kirsty Hunter. It's a Story Hunter production for BBC Radio 4, and you can catch up with Lady Swindlers weekly on BBC Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
I'm Annabelle Dees, and from BBC Radio 4, this is Shadow World, The Smuggler.
People coming to this country was making me successful.
A year ago, I met a people smuggler, a British man who joined an international smuggling gang. I uncover his motivations and his methods.
I'm telling you now how easy it is.
And investigate whether his tactics are still possible.
That does leave a really exploitable loophole for individuals who want to do harm.
Shadow World, The Smuggler. Listen now on BBC Sounds.